3 hours or something like that. I had some stats on it last night, and
It's definitely like you've got to resist looking at your phone. It's that kind of film sometimes.
well, I didn't have that temptation, but it was more, I think I did a couple of skims of the psychedelic kind of outro scene where he's, you know, doing whatever he's doing there. We'll get to that. But I definitely just, I would skip like 10 seconds here and there because I'm like, okay, it's going to be like pink lines for a while here. I could save myself some time. And I also watched the movie in, you know, three or four different segments, I guess, as well.
Interesting.
I was
Okay, yeah, that
focusing
makes
on the
more sense.
transitions more than anything as well. Because it's like you have, you know, you have the scene with the apes, and I was looking at how that transitions into space, and then how, you know, there's the other main transition of him sort of, well, when like shit goes wrong with Hal, and then suddenly he's basically at Jupiter having this crazy trip, and then next transition is, you know, like him aging very quickly or whatever. But I've rushed ahead. The
Yeah, we'll get
plot, I
to it.
mean, the plot is four paragraphs long here. Should I skim
Just,
it?
yeah, just skim it.
Well, okay, so the beginning of the film, there's a tribe of apes, hominids, well, whatever, prehistoric Africa. They find an alien monolith has appeared, just randomly in their kind of area. They discover how to use a bone. This causes them to discover how to use a bone as a weapon, and we'll definitely talk about kind of how that scene relates to, I don't know, things like original sin or theories about, you know, the stoned apes theory, and technological progress and man's kind of, or humankind's extreme curiosity leading to certain pitfalls, perhaps. Anyway, after their first hunt, return to drive their rivals away with the newly discovered tool, which is the bone. Millions of years later, spaceship. Russian scientists concerned that the clavius seems to be unresponsive. Floyd refuses to discuss rumors of an epidemic at the base. So it's kept under wraps, basically, that they've discovered the monolith on. Is it the moon originally? Yeah, it's the moon.
Yeah, the moon.
And then I think it's 18 months later, the Jupiter mission. Yeah, 18 months later, United States spacecraft Discovery 1 is bound for Jupiter. The main character, David Bowman, obviously isn't aware of the discovery of the monolith until later in the film, when there's sort of a video that is set to be shown to him once he reaches Jupiter. There's a AI computer system controlling the spaceship called HAL, the main sort of antagonist of the film, or HAL 9000. Basically, HAL is very self-aware, sort of creepily so, and it kind of escalates throughout the film. And then it turns out, well, David and his partner, Frank, they have a discussion about not trusting HAL. Hal reads their lips, because they thought that he wouldn't be able to hear them, didn't realize that he was reading their lips, and then tricks them into going onto a spacewalk because part of the spaceship is seemingly malfunctioning. So he gets first, I think Dave goes out there, comes back fine, but then Frank has to go out again, and Hal fucks him up. That's when he tries to lock Dave out of the spaceship. And Dave gets back in through the emergency escape, then makes it to Jupiter. And the next sort of 30 minutes of the film is quite open to interpretation, but he seems to have some sort of psychedelic trip or time travel or whatever, possibly due to the proximity of the monolith. That's my theory. And then he sort of ages very rapidly. Some people theorize that it's like a zoo-like environment of advanced beings, and they kind of just watch him age, and then he turns into a super baby which floats in space beside the Earth. Is that anything I
Yeah.
missed?
No, that's everything, I think. Yeah. Maybe we should turn off our cameras. I'm lagging a little bit.
Okay, cool, man. Turn off camera. Done.
All right, go for it. Start us off.
Okay, well, let me refer to my little notes that I made. Man, the the start, you know how it's a black screen with suspenseful music for about, I don't know, 3 minutes? Because I was trying to get Son to watch it with me. And I have this joke that she hates old films. You know, she only likes modern sort of Marvel action films. It's not true, but like that's just the joke that I have with her. You know, yeah. As in like, oh, no attention span, young kids. You know, she hates black and white films and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is epic. You know, it's color. It's like a really nice sci-fi space movie and the start of it. And then it's just black screen for 3 whole minutes. And like, these days, that is just unthinkable. It's crazy how our kind of expectations have changed for the pace of films. But, you know, it's, yeah, I think
they certainly have changed.
It's very Tarkovskian, I would say. I don't know if Kubrick and him were buddies or inspired, but that kind of leads into the other side topic. And there's a decent article about it, how both films, Solaris and this, they're very similar, and they came out kind of towards the end of the space race as well. Well, Solaris definitely was after the space race, so it's kind of like the film version of the USSR versus the USA.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess like they're also sort of... you know, they're both in a position to grapple with the problems and like the possibilities of space travel.
Yeah, exactly.
And exploration.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously like, you know, there's like great leaps in technology as well around that time.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, I mean, it would have been so exciting to see either of the two at the cinema. Imagine at that time,
huge,
like just
yeah.
given your expectations for entertainment in general. Like for us, even now, it's still like, whoa, this is pretty cool. But back
I would
then,
love to watch either of these on a big screen.
Man, I downloaded the like the 22 gigabyte Blu-ray version.
Fuck, right.
And just because I wanted to see it in like full quality. And it looks amazing, man. It's so crisp. Like, you know, imagine this on a cinema screen. It would be just... It looks as good as, you know, Gravity or films like that. And it has a lot of similarities to Gravity, but it just looks still so timeless, I guess.
It does. I agree. Like, it's very 80s in some parts, like the structure of the ships and some of the colours and the uniforms. But a lot of it sort of was the... I guess this sort of period is the last time that anyone thought of the future in this way.
Yeah. But
now everything is sort of like that and just a little bit different, whereas that was quite a departure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that is... I mean, it's always... You're never going to get everything right when you do a... You know, when you do a film set in the future. And what you always see is like the dials and switches are always like 50s style dials and switches. They're not like touch screens and stuff that we have today. That's just always like the thing that's different. But it's still, you know, it still looks modern.
That's some of the sort of like the materiality of the period. You know, you just can't get past the things that they were using in that sense.
Yeah. And they, you know, I think he. I can't remember the guy's name. The guy who's the main sort of bureaucrat guy earlier on in the film, and he you know how he calls his daughter or whatever, or he calls back to his friend, he's like on the video phone or the like. I can't remember what they call it, but it's just
so good. And it's
kind
charges
of they
you
didn't,
credits and shit as well.
They underestimated how far developed that technology would be, and overestimated you know space technology, I guess.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like they underestimated the versatility of the technology and far overestimated the consumer aspect. Like, oh yeah, of course you're going to vacation to the moon. It's going to be very easy.
Yeah.
And also just like the flights were very like 80s in like airline flights. You know, you have your sort of like women dressed in a particular uniform handing out all these things.
Yeah, yeah. That was very very 60s.
Yeah, for sure. Like that's kind of, I don't know, that's kind of like just an average sort of sci-fi movie up until the point where they get to the obelisk on the moon. I think that and Solaris have the same sort of starting, right? Like they have like a boardroom, something's gone wrong, someone's like, no,
they
that's
were
not
extremely
right.
similar in that way. And how it's kind of about the unknown alien sort of area or object.
Yeah, of course, like you have this sort of like, I don't even know what you call it, like it's like transpositional, I guess, obelisk, because it sort of moves through space but appears on like aspects of space as well, right? Like, because it seems like it's moving through space, but you can also find it on places like the moon and Saturn and stuff.
Well, I couldn't tell if they were implying that there are just multiples of it or if it's the same kind of creepy alien object that just
I
does
thought there were
that.
multiples, but
That's what I
yeah.
thought.
I mean, it could even be like what, like a particle or whatever. It's sort of like everywhere at the same time as it can be anywhere.
It's just that classic, it's just the idea of the unknown. It's the Lovecraft sort of thing, where it's, the unknown is scarier than the known boogeyman.
Well, that's sort of funny, in that sort of logic as well, right? Because you know exactly what it is. It's just like, what the fuck, like, put it there, you know? It's like, or like, why is it there? Like, you know what it is. It's just like a thing, but like, its context and its history are absolutely like absent.
That's
So it's
why,
almost like
I kind of, I definitely, it gave me ideas about the kind of Garden of Eden original sin story, because you could kind of see it. And Kubrick's very ambiguous about his intentions and what he means, but he likes to leave, especially this film, like open to interpretation. But
Some
one way
gaps,
you could see it is just sort of implying, or it's just a it's symbolic of the forbidden fruit. So like the apes find this monolith, just in their way, and that triggers the thought process of inquiry, of just scientific inquiry. And then he's kind of implying from then on, like, this is the road that we end up going down, whatever the original sin story is symbolizing, from the Bible. It does definitely remind me of that. It's just like we were pure kind of animals, just, surviving, and then something happened that made us curious, and now we are infinitely curious, and that's good and bad. It causes a lot of suffering in a lot of ways, but it also, it feels like
It
something
has
we just
like
have to
a
do. It feels
progression or
natural to
something.
do, to inquire and to like do science.
Yeah, and I guess, I agree with that, but I wonder if, like, I would almost flip it and say, like, that the initial apes and the obelisk, or like whatever you want to call it, is like, they have something that's so like bizarre and contextless that it has to sort of be protected. Like, they become obsessed with it, and so the only thing that they can do is sort of, instantiate murder. Like,
They probably would have worshipped it, yeah.
Or just like, like, what is this thing? Well, we don't like, I don't like, now I have a relationship to this thing. I don't want like it to come into contact with other things, like
Yeah.
this object is my object or the group's object or whatever.
Yeah.
And so
Really
like, it's
thingified.
like, and it's like what we were talking about last week or last fortnight about like the impossibility of something before it happens. So like, before there's murder, it could never be a thing until it happens. And so with these apes, you have the first, like, not premeditated, but almost like hot-blooded murder, like,
Yeah.
it's just like, you're in the way of my thing. You're trying to take this thing away from this group. Like, we are constituted by it just as much as like we have to look after it. And it, yeah, and I, it, along the same thing as you were saying, like, it does
Yeah, they're
sort of
corrupted
set
by it.
us. Yeah, like it sets a course from there
Yeah.
on out, like.
It's the same with Eva. Like, she's like, she'll be so friendly until there's like a ball, and then, or like a lot of dogs, it's like, it's my ball, motherfucker, like, get away from my ball, or a bone, or whatever the thing is. But like, without the thing, they're just like, want to play.
And I guess like the other thing about like sort of, I guess like corruption or like Garden of Eden allegories and stuff like that is that, like, I guess you kind of assume in the animal kingdom, and this is like pre-culture, pre-humanity, I guess, pre any like linguistic relationship, is like it's sort of like everything has its context within like a symbiotic system. So like, if a thing like this random black like obelisk pops up out of nowhere, it sort of like it breaks that
Yeah, like,
there's a
okay.
problem. There's a gap somewhere.
Yeah, because
you know
you can
what I mean?
see
Like,
that, yeah, how everything else sort of comes about. Yeah.
yeah, and so then you're forced to have to confront, like, how does everything fit in with this? And then, like, that obviously changes the course of thought as well, because then you have to go beyond what is considered natural, you know? Like, so, like, and that's, like, you could sort of think of that as, like, the history of culture as well. Like, once you're pulled out of an animal setting where it's just sort of, like, needs and demands, and enter into, like, language and culture, you have that sort of gap. Like, you're like, oh, you know, you're a human and you're an animal, but you're not really an animal and you're not fully a human. You've got these instincts or drives or whatever you want to call them, but you go beyond it, and you know, there's like one thing that sort of gets in the way of just being like a thing, you know? And once that happens, you can't go back.
Yeah. I do think as well that, well, I'm not sure, but I do theorize that because Kubrick made this after Strangelove, I feel that his thought progression moved, like, progressed from obviously satirizing and critiquing, you know, nuclear war and nuclear armament in general. And then he kind of went to a more general critique of technology and technological progress. And that's why I can kind of see it as that curiosity sort of thing, you know, like, or the obelisk and the bone, the first kind of pieces of technology, loosely defined as, to the apes. And so it's Kubrick's kind of dig. Although I don't think he wrote it. I don't know how much he adapted from the actual novel, the original novel, but
Oh, there was a novel. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
yeah, that's the thing.
I'll have to read that.
I think it's Arthur C. Clarke.
Oh, okay. I do know.
Yeah,
Yeah. Okay.
yeah,
The famous writer.
yeah. That's the thing, because I remembered that from reading the kind of Solaris versus 2001 article, because both, you know, both original novels were written by established authors, Stanislaw Lem and Arthur. And yeah, it's so I definitely see it that way, as him sort of. Not necessarily saying that technological progress is bad, but just kind of pointing it out that, you know, this is the path we're on, and we can kind of, you know, we do tend to take it in negative ways, such as nuclear arms, but then also seemingly unavoidable ways. Like, there seems like there's no real way. I think every kind of society would develop nuclear weapons.
But I guess that also assumes that, like, societies are necessarily antagonistic. Like, say if the relationship between
I assume that.
and I mean, that it has historically, it seems, been the case.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're wrong in thinking that,
Well,
but
we don't
like,
have non-human examples to compare against, but it would be so interesting if you if the kind of whatever that paradox is, where there's a kind of theory that, you know, all civilizations just end up destroying themselves. So it'd be
yeah, like the
interesting if you
Roman Empire,
found
right?
like
Like,
remnants of alien civilizations that had done the same as us.
Yeah, I think that brings up a funny sort of idea. There was like this dude, he was like a Trotskyist, and then he went sort of AWOL, called Posadas or Posad, I think, Argentinian communist. And like at some point, he just sort of got really into like UFOlogy and stuff, and he said like. And I mean, I think it's very bizarre, and I don't know how like people really got into it, but something that he said that I thought was interesting was like, well, if there are aliens, and if aliens have like come to Earth and they're looking, like they're researching us and stuff, that necessarily means that we've moved beyond like antagonistic relationships, and like we've moved beyond like capitalist forms of production, because we wouldn't be able to get to a technology like that if there wasn't like socialism or communism or something in that. Like necessarily to reach that form of technology, you'd have to get beyond a point where it's just like absolute exhaustion for profit
But I
rather than
think, but
like.
don't you think w I'm not like using this as a, you know, to like say one system is better or worse, but don't you think we would get there regardless of the, you know, socioeconomic system?
I think it would have to. It depends,
Like,
really. Like, I
doesn't
think that,
capitalism
like.
still lead to, you know, obviously it leads to bad things, but also technological progress?
Yeah, I agree. It does lead to technological progress, but the people who are in charge of that often like just do dumb shit, right? Like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos are going to space. Like, they're not looking to research anything. They're looking to continue forms of antagonism by like colonizing other planets. and like exploiting them, you know what I mean? That's sort of the difference. Like, it's the difference between like going places and like looking at it and studying and being like, oh, that's interesting, versus like, we're gonna take your fucking land and we're gonna, you know, use all of your resources, because that's what they want
I've come
after
around
all.
to Elon, I must say.
Oh
You'll be
no.
upset. No, I mean, I don't fucking love the guy. I don't know the guy, but I don't, you know, hold him in the same regard as Jeff Bezos or people like
No, they're all the same group of fucks.
that.
But
You're so
anyway,
cynical.
yeah, I think, yeah, I agree with that sort of loose theorization or analysis as we're moving forward. I think and the other fascinating aspect is like, so this is a bit of a jump to like when they're in the spaceship with Hal, but like, so this Hal is like one of two operating systems, right? And
Yeah, like he's the
like,
newer version, I think.
yeah, and his like logic is like impeccable. Like, he can only be right
Yeah.
based on like the like large amount of data that he
Yeah.
has. But like, it's funny because wouldn't that like mean that there has to be some, because the parameters are like, I make all the decisions based on all the data I have, but they're in like an unknown place. So how can they ever make like always correct decisions based on unknown variables?
Yeah.
So like necessarily it has to end in like chaos. Or like, I don't know, like some sort of unknown thing entering into it. I don't know. I feel like hell, like the fact that like they establish hell as this like super intelligence is only gonna lead to that, the, well, like how it ends.
I'm drawing such a blank here on kind of quite an important part of the film. What triggers Hal? Why does he turn against them again?
Well, I think there's a
What
failure
happens before
somewhere.
they. No. He makes that up, but I can't remember what. Like, what causes them to plan to shut him down? So he reports the failure thing, and then it doesn't. And then they're like, it doesn't make sense, and they're discussing it. And then that's when they stop trusting him. But I think the original report was him trying to get them both out of the ship. Because obviously he can't predict what they're going to do in every situation. But was it something to do with, did Hal just, like,
Okay,
why did he want them dead
so
in the first place? Or want the ship to himself? Was it?
apparently there was a contradiction, a programming contradiction that's inherent in Hal, which the crisis was caused by a programming contradiction. He was constructed for the accurate processing of information without distortion or concealment, yet his orders directly from Dr. Hayward Floyd at the National Council of Astronautics required him to keep the discovery of the monolith TMA-1 a secret for reasons of national security. The contradiction created a Hofstadter-Mobius loop, reducing Hal to paranoia. Therefore, Hal made the decision to kill the crew, thereby allowing to obey both his hardwired instructions to report data truthfully and in full, and his orders to keep the monolith a secret. In essence, if the crew were dead, he would no longer have to keep the information secret.
That's interesting. Where did you read that from? Is that on on the main Wikipedia page? But that makes complete sense.
On the Wikipedia page for Hell 9000.
Ah, nice. That, you know, that makes complete sense. So it's kind of like, in a way, it's human error. Well, it's not human error, but it's just when you know, program an AI, you would have to be so careful of those sorts of contradictions because, you know, it's like the there's some sort of theory about like a paperclip machine or something where it just like turns everything into paperclips and it will just do that to, if you like just give it that one instruction, like turn everything into paperclips, then it will just destroy
That's
Earth.
interesting. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense,
It's
right?
like
Because,
so
like, how
simple,
could
but you
you?
just, yeah, you end up having to write like a million lines of code instructions to make sure of all the kind of various things that could go wrong when you have a complex, you know, set of instructions for an AI to avoid these sorts of things. Because,
Apparently.
yeah, that's funny about the paranoia causing it.
Yeah, which is, like, a fascinating concept to be thought of in artificial
Well,
intelligence.
they allude to his self-awareness a lot, you know, where there's like the TV interview and stuff.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you sound full of yourself or whatever.
Exactly.
So anyway, I just want to like end this paperclip thing. It's called instrumental convergence, right? And
Okay.
so, the paperclip maximizer is a thought experiment described by Swedish philosopher Nick Bostrom in 2003. It illustrates the existential risk that an artificial general intelligence may pose to human beings when programmed to pursue even seemingly harmless goals, and the necessity of incorporating machine ethics into artificial intelligence design. So, the scenario describes an advanced artificial intelligence tasked with manufacturing paperclips. If such a machine were not programmed to value human life or to use only designated resources in bounded time, then given enough power, its optimized goal would be to turn all matter in the universe, including human beings, into either paperclips or machines which manufacture paperclips. But it's interesting. It is interesting to like think about machine ethics and artificial intelligence, the ethics around artificial intelligence. Because, and I guess we're doing what we do best, which is going off topic, but it'll wind back into it. I was at Matt's housewarming last night, and I was talking to Helen about how it's impossible for like a journalist or a scientist or anyone to be fully objective, because to start off your experiment or your like journalistic report or whatever is to make a subjective decision. And so you can never fully get this. You can like even if you do like
You
like
would be
processes of
discussing that
multiplication.
such a nerdy topic at a housewarming, wouldn't you?
Well, I was just saying like even with like the sort of like the rules of falsification and stuff like that in any scientific experiment, still you can get to a very, very slight margin where your own subjectivity is almost out of it, but it's still in there. You know what I mean? Like, and that's just, yeah, I guess that's the same sort of
So for
thing with
like, yeah, for like if someone that creates an AI, like the American AI would think differently to the Russian AI, etc.
yeah, it's
Or
gonna have a little bit of whoever made it in
the
there.
Taliban
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Great conversation, but now you've made me feel like I was just like some fucking up my ass person at a party being like,
You
well.
got drunk and thought you were doing the podcast, and you're, oh, wait a
She was loving it. She was totally into it.
minute. You're like, by the way, I've got a
Yeah,
podcast
subscribe.
if you want more.
But yeah, no, it is a fascinating concept because you, I guess, I mean, like the concept of pathological states in artificial intelligence seems kind of like an impossibility almost, because like the popular idea of an artificial intelligence is sort of like a brain drawn, or like all the cords that are cut to like emotion and all that sort of stuff. Like you just want logical calculations based on evidence and data. But like because like this robot, this artificial intelligence also has to interact with people, it sort of has to take on a personality as well.
That makes sense. And so it kind of gets caught in the middle. It's like it's always
Exactly.
bound to
And
have issues,
you
yeah.
see it, sort of, I don't know if you'd call it humanity or not, but it's certainly an aspect of humanity when it's sort of begging not to be killed at the end, when he's taking out the, and yeah, although like, this is a fucking like homicidal spaceship, it is kind of shocking. Like, I don't know, maybe you should just like, you shouldn't kill
It's kind of
him.
sad, yeah. He's like, I can feel it. I can
Yeah.
feel it. I can feel it.
It is cool though. That is an awesome scene.
And that scene, I should watching this because I haven't seen it in maybe 10 years or something. It made me realize how many other sci-fis have kind of copied it in ways or like taken
Oh,
inspiration
yeah.
from it. Especially the
For
scene
sure.
when he's like pulling out Hal's kind of hard drives or whatever he's doing in there. It's very similar in Interstellar when Matthew McConaughey goes into the kind of like four-dimensional area. Where there's like lines, sort of parallel lines running all across, like, and it's very, it reminded me of that a lot. It's kind of like you go inside the outside of space zone or whatever. And then also the when he has to come in through the emergency airlock without his helmet, there's a scene like that in Sunshine. I think
Oh
it's
yeah.
Sunshine.
Yep. Yeah, 100% it is Sunshine.
And
That one's fucked. That's pretty yeah.
Yeah, I was looking up how long you can survive in space without a helmet. There actually is a case. I think it was in 1965. Apparently, there was something happened where an astronaut was exposed to basically close to vacuum pressure, and he survived. Happened? And apparently he recounted that he could feel the saliva on his tongue boiling before he passed out. Apparently it was like 14 seconds or so before he passed out. But because I think the extreme low pressure reduces the boiling point of fluids in your body to a temperature that's lower than your than like 37 degrees. So your body heat, I think this is how it works, will start to boil those fluids.
Wow. Yeah,
because of the low pressure.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's fucked. Oh my god.
That's part of the reason that you die so quickly, I guess.
And it's 14 seconds before you passed out.
I think the theoretical like limit is 15 seconds basically, and then you pretty much are dead. That's how long Jesus you could survive. But I think you'd probably need to have half a suit on or something. I don't really know. But yeah, and you also, if you're ever in that situation, obviously, you're meant to exhale. You're meant to have, you're safer with no air in your lungs.
Why is that?
I think it's to do with like oxidation of the blood, like similar to divers getting the bends. I don't really know, but you're better off not having the air inside of you. I think
I'll have to remember that.
I don't think it will. I think it tries to get out, you know, not through your.
Okay, so it's like your vacuum sucks it out.
I think it must be like it tries to come out through the organs or something, or just, you know, go
it goes
straight into the blood. Yeah, I don't really know, but
Jesus Christ, that's fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Futurama. Futurama takes a lot from 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, really?
The ship has, like, a hell AI, and Bender and the ship go on, like, dates and have sex and stuff.
I actually didn't know that. I need to see more Futurama.
Yeah, there's a lot. I have, like, the whole DVD collection. I got in, like, high school. I still remember most of it.
It's a pretty awesome show.
Oh, brilliant. But, yeah,
should we move towards the kind of like meaning of the last 30 minutes of the film?
Okay, sure. If you don't have anything more you'd like to say about what we've got to so far.
Well, actually, the other thing, just quickly, it's called a match cut.
Between the bone and the ship.
I didn't notice it at the time, but then I'm reading it now. Apparently, it's a very famous cut.
Yeah, it is a big example of like match cuts in like film school and shit. I think that's the example I always got told when I was doing my thesis.
Yeah, I mean it's a pretty common technique, isn't it?
I think it was pretty revolutionary at the time, and like for what it says as well in terms of like a film language.
Yeah, well, that's what I was gonna say. For me, that's another allusion to him, you know, sort of blatantly stating like the bone is primitive technology, as is the spaceship. Like to say, also, like we went from here to there.
Yeah. I think you could also say, like, given the filming language's expression, you could almost say that it's like deterministic. Like from the moment that the bone was turned into a weapon or a tool, you could only get to this point that we are now in the film. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like no matter what, like sort of stochastic or contingent elements occur in the passage of history, these two points can only be connected.
Yeah. Yeah. I just read, so the version that I watched, it was based on an 8K scan of the original camera negative. So it was very HD, but yeah,
that's
great.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was worth
it. I would love to be someone who does that sort of stuff. That seems like a really
like
you'd really, really enjoy your stuff. Like it'd be fucking annoying to have to do like all that painstaking technical bullshit, but you'd do it for the love of the game for sure.
Yeah.
It'd be fun as well, because I hear lots of interesting stories about people finding, like, original reels for films and stuff in, like, the back lot of, like, Universal or something. Like, there's a little bit of, like,
wasn't there a massive fire a few years ago where a lot of originals were lost?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess, like, I don't know if
that might have been a music thing, actually. I think it was music, not films.
Yeah, I think the original film reels are for somebody else, you know, like they're not necessarily for the production company. They're just keeping them as equity or whatever,
Yeah.
whereas like they're looking for new money.
No, they keep it so they can trickle release new versions, slightly different versions of it. And it's like it's from the original, and then
Hello?
they can keep
Can you hear
selling
me?
it. Yeah.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Check, 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 check. Hello? I can hear you.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yo, yo.
Hey, all right.
Sweet.
Where did I
We're
lose
back.
you?
You started saying, "Can you hear me?"
Okay, good. That's fine.
Yeah, my net just, I don't know, disappeared, but I'm on the hotspots, so it's all G.
Okay, cool. Saying. It doesn't matter. We'll continue.
I actually can't remember what we were talking about. Can you?
No, not gonna happen. But that's okay. You
I was talking
start
about the
us off
match
again.
cut. You were talking about the match cut a little bit, I think, with the bone.
The bone, yeah. Yeah, I think we got everything we need out of that anyways. Do you wanna hit me with what you're thinking?
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, I want to see if you have any red hot takes on the kind of trip scene. I mean, for me, it kind of. I don't think this is what Kubrick intended, but just because of his sort of nature, but it's a possible theory in that essentially instead of the sort of technological original sin theory, or maybe this is also like a different version and a doubling of that, but I'm thinking the monolith is, you know, similar to Solaris and how the planet causes like, you know, psychological events. Proximity to the monolith causes these insane psychedelic trips, which is what David experiences as he approaches Jupiter, and what the apes experience, causing them to kind of have, you know, make the neural connection to develop the technology. And that links to, I think, Terence McKenna's stoned ape theory in that the step from Neanderthals, I don't know if it's a step from apes to Neanderthals or Neanderthals to humans, but the theory is basically that, and there is some evidence supporting it, that these apes in, you know, ancient Africa ate psychedelic mushrooms, and that's what sort of caused their brains to go on this rapid development to, you know, to become human brains from sort of animal brains and form all those new kind of neural connections and stuff. What do you think of that?
Interesting. I don't really even know anything about that, but I think it's
It's an
fascinating
interesting
to think that
theory.
like yeah like
Apparently there's evidence
something
for
like
it, like to do with where the mushrooms would have grown and that like they were on the ground, you know, like so we came down from the trees or whatever and started eating these mushrooms from the ground and, you know, in Africa, you know, because there's evidence that the first humans sort of came from Africa.
yeah, isn't that like what do they call mitochondrial Eve, right? Like the first ever woman is like you can see it in the history of the mitochondria, where they came from, where humanity, I guess, began. It's sort of and Africa, but yeah, that's interesting. I guess so. Like it doesn't, you know, it doesn't. I don't feel particularly antagonistic towards that theory. I think it's interesting. I don't really know what
I guess, yeah, there definitely is some antagonism towards it. It's probably just more because, like, Terence McKenna is, you know, quite known for being a bit
a
pretty different guy.
psychedelic psychonaut or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess like maybe the sort of temporary allergy to a theory like that couldn't might not have anything to do with the theory itself, but those the sort of person you might hear say it, like I can imagine you could hear it at like a bush doof a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
As like as
Well, yeah, I
a
guess, because
persuasive
it,
argument for doing psychedelics, you know what I
It's
mean? Like it
always a
has nothing to do
dangerous
with
theory to, yeah, say that these drugs will make you smarter.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily that, it's just like the way that it's abused. So I think that like the way that I might come into contact with that theory is from someone being like, no, you should do this drug because like the history of like this drug has sort of led to where we are now, and I would be like, okay. Make me smarter. Go ahead. But it's not like people aren't over that sort of the way of thinking about drugs anyway. It's like there's always a new drug that's supposed to make you smarter or like open your eyes to something new or whatever. And I think it's just like probably an example or an effect of many effects of like assuming that there's something beyond behind images. You know what I mean? Like there's always, and there is, I totally agree, behind words, behind images, behind everything, there's something else, or at least like the sort of desire to see if there is something behind it, like there's an allegory or something behind everything.
Well, yeah, I guess you
And
could see the
yeah.
irony as, you know, the ultimate irony is like man presented with, you know, these psychedelic substances, and that causes him to wrongly think that in taking more of those, he can discover the true meaning of life and the universe. And, you know, just like where technological progress, we think that we will somehow uncover more meaning by continuing to progress technologically. And, you know, the irony is that it's not there at all. But, you know, people will say they'll see, you know, magic mushrooms or LSD as kind of an alternative to technology, but in a way it's still pursuing the same misdirected goal of finding meaning, like uncovering meaning by pursuing some path that actually doesn't really lead anywhere. I mean,
Yeah, I
not that, not
agree.
to say
Like,
that, you know, I'm definitely a proponent of psychedelics here and there, kind of can help you with more kind of human issues, but I don't see them as, they're not going to show you some holy light, put it that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like, I'm not against drugs. You know, I don't do them myself anymore, but, I wouldn't begrudge anyone for them. I guess if like they were having a really negative effect or something on somebody, I'd be like, all right, probably time to take a break from that. But yeah, I think that like maybe another thing that sort of like pushes me away from that sort of thinking is that like a lot of popular thoughts on drugs are very similar to like Christian revelation
Yeah,
or
exactly.
any sort of
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
oh, you know, you see God or you like you transcend your ego or something. I just like, well, you probably don't, because then you wouldn't be like a person, you know. Your ego is like relatively constituted of you, you know. Like, but maybe it's a different language they're using. Maybe they're just trying to say like, you get over the sort of like worldly desires or whatever, like some Buddhist sort of shit. I don't know.
Yeah, it
I
depends
guess
how you
that's just sort
frame
of
it.
like,
I think how you frame the expectations of that action, you know, if it is presented as, yeah, complete death of the ego, that's when I think people get tricked. And you need to
And I
realize that
guess
you need
like,
like some semblance of ego to kind of get by in the world.
and I guess like, you know, I think people are suffering, and if that helps you, then yeah. But like, it is also a cause of suffering if you go too far into it.
Yeah.
And I guess the same thing with technology, right? Like, I would never
Yeah.
wholesale praise technology. You know, like a lot of it is just like ways to sort of like cover up the fact that like some billionaire has just bought like half of India and has just been like, oh, this app actually just like works if you click a button,
Yeah, or
and
just
it's just
ways to
you know.
distract yourself from what you want to do.
And it's just, you know, like a lot of it is just like returning to baby kind of like, oh, you know, I want a car to take me from here to here. Press the button. Oh, who fucking cares if this person gets paid like $2 an hour and like they don't get paid for gas or like insurance or anything? Like, take me to where I want to go. Don't take a train or a bus or, you know, a bike or anything, like, but or even like fast food as well, you know, like, for instance, with Uber Eats or whatever, like, it's dangerous and you get no like health insurance, and like the most dangerous times are also the highest demand times. So when it's raining outside, people are more inclined to order takeout, but like it's also the most dangerous time to be driving in rain, right? So there's
Yeah.
more incidences. So yeah, there's a lot of problems with it. So yeah, I guess like everything's pretty bad.
Yeah.
But yeah,
So, did you have any alternative theory to what I've
I
said about
do. I
that outro scene? Or would
I
you kind of
do. I
agree?
do. I like what you have to say. I did have a bit of a different reading of it, which was and sort of connects with what I was saying about the initial scene of the obelisk with the apes, which is that like, so there's this thing that like renders the, you know, simple, well, maybe the like seemingly simple but like really complex symbiotic relationship of the earth, and then it sort of shatters it or puts like a gap in there and says like, you know, ape question mark something else, you know, like whereas before it'd be like ape. Or something. I don't know. Like the whatever the like structure of relationships was at that point. And so as the ship gets closer and closer to Jupiter, I think that like metaphorically it's also moving further and further outside of like the space, the symbolic space of meaning. And so, and you see the obelisk sort of spinning in space as he's going. And so he's sort of reached the point where like that gap or question mark, he's entered that gap, and that's what the sort of like colors and stuff I would say maybe are representative of. And then like he can watch himself in time, you know, he can watch himself age and die and like be born anew, and like sort of he becomes, you know, an embryo of the world again because he is part of that symbolic relationship again. There is sense in that. So you can sort of be inserted back into the world. So I thought like similar to, was it level 13 or something that we watched? Remember ages
I know what you're
ago?
saying.
13th stage, 12th stage, something like that, 14th
I know
level.
what you mean.
And he drives up and then it just stops and you see the simulation
Fuck, what was that
and the
called?
edges of the simulation.
We really
It's
don't
sort of
remember that
like
film at
that.
all, but
Yeah, okay, so like at one point he finds out there's a simulation and like someone tells him like, oh, if you
the
drive up this
13th
road, you'll get
floor.
to a 13th floor, that's it, yeah. You'll get to a point where the simulation stops and you'll just see like, I don't know, classic sort of simulation, green lines on like a grid or something. And it's sort of the same thing here, but instead he sort of like moved through into that like part out of like that symbolic simulation out of it into this thing where he can sort of be like in a new dimension of time, watching himself as someone who's moving through time. Does that make sense? You know, like because like the sort of like the symbolic coordinates of like language and understanding are like fractured, but also the like how we might think of like the arrow of time and entropy and stuff like that has like become disorganized.
It's almost like it's almost not cheesy, but it's definitely, I wouldn't say cheesy, but I don't know the word that I'm looking for, but it's kind of it's been done a lot in sci-fi where it's just, you know, like man goes on space travel and enters sort of black hole type environment, and then time does, like this is the plot of Interstellar almost, you know, like you enter the kind of unknown realm, the where time and everything's backwards, and
Yeah,
this,
weird shit pops out of nowhere and all that.
yeah, it happens in so it's very similar in Interstellar. It's also similar in, what's the one produced by Carl Sagan? It's a normal film. It's not a documentary or.
Cosmos.
No.
No.
It's a movie. Like
Oh, I haven't, I don't know if I've seen that. Maybe I'm not sure.
doesn't matter. There's a very similar scene where he basically travels through like a really colorful kind of wormhole and ends up somewhere else.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. But
Well, I think.
it just kind of it's almost become like formulaic. It's just like man goes on journey, you know, reaches black hole slash God, discovers that there's, you know, discovers all the answers, but like we the viewer don't get to, you need that experience. We the viewer are kind of sidelined to that experience, and so we watch him experience it, but we, and it's just like putting the full meaning of existence just outside of reach, like it's inside the cinema screen, and we watch him, you know, become a baby and possibly know everything that the alien civilization knows or whatever causes those events, but it's kind of the paradox of existing. You could never
Yeah,
fully
well, I guess.
understand your own existence, and kind of, I don't think it would make sense to live in a world if you knew the reason behind everything. And that's what
Yeah,
that
I
alludes
think
to
I
for
have
me.
sort of like three broad points about that, maybe. So, first off, is the Carl Sagan one you're thinking of, is it Contact?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Second thing is, I guess, no problem. I guess, like, I like to like think of it like I like to be a bit of an anti-humanist and think that it's like, well, you know, there's no meaning. It's just like random contingency. There is like no God or whatever, or if there is a meaning, you've sort of made it yourself, which is totally fine, you know, or you've like enlisted in a group or a religion or the army or something, and you've sort of taken on a set of rules or codes or morals or whatever. place you in a particular place. Some yeah. And then I guess like the baby, it sort of is like, like the world is sort of imagined as a totality. You fit in the world. The world fits with you. You're sort of in it and you're out of it. But really, like, it's a lot of gaps. So you sort of fill the world yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you are the gap in the world. And I feel like that's maybe what's representative of the chart, like the embryonic stage of the fetus matching with the earth, is that like it sort of can only become the world or the earth as you know it as you were born. Because like the world, like if there were no humans on the face of the earth, like nothing would change. But like a leg wouldn't be a lake, it would be a thing, like a something, but it wouldn't be a lake, it wouldn't be like a lake that's painted or a lake that's written about in various like metaphors and like literalized in experiments and stuff like that. Yeah. I feel like
Beautiful.
I had something else to say, but I can't fully remember.
No, that's, I mean, it's hard to fully get these points into, spoken words, I think.
Oh, actually, no, I do remember. And it was funny because it was such a throwaway comment that someone made ages ago. It might have been my like supervisor at the time, and he was like, "Every time I watch a space film, and they go to outer space, it's actually the reverse, and they're like entering themselves. Like that's the really unknown part." And I don't know why. Like, we're kind of joking around, but at the same time, I was like, "That's pretty interesting." Like, and it is sort of that way. Like, you do enter into like,
Yeah. Well,
like
it's
as you
like
go into outer
we
space, and it becomes more and more.
I think
Oh
we
yeah.
naturally have this inclination that the answer is out there. But then whenever you go out there, you realize it's quite fucking lonely. Like I had such a good experience, No Man's Sky. When I first got it, I was playing it. I was like, because I, it's something I dreamed about doing, as a kid. It's like this is the next best thing. Obviously, we're not actually going into space, but it is a very good virtual representation of it because of the kind of procedurally generated, universe and how large it actually is. If you can kind of map that onto, the real universe potentially being randomly generated, if you believe that, then it kind of it syncs up nicely. But anyway, the experience I had was I just went out on my spaceship, just kind of playing freely. I traveled to a random planet, and I landed it on like a high up sort of cliff or something. Anyway, it turned out that I kind of went down off the cliff and I couldn't get back to my spaceship. And I ended up just stranded on this planet that had like no life. It was kind of cold, and I was like running around. Like it just, it, I had such a visceral experience of like, say, being out in space on some planet fucking light years away with no other life, not even animals or anything. And it was just the most like intense feeling of loneliness, but in a good way. I was just like, wow, like this is so. It's such a real experience, even though it's through a game. Like I just, cause I was like, I want to get back. I want to go home. Like I want to go see people and do stuff. And I was like, I had to try and like, rebuild a ship or something. And yeah, that's just kind of, it was a valuable experience to kind of think like, if you, like everyone thinks, oh, I want to go out and explore the universe, but you also want like a home and you want people and a community.
It's like, you always want what you don't have, and then like when you get that, you're like, oh, I want the other thing as
Yeah,
well.
it's like
So
if I
it's
if
impossible to
yeah,
be fulfilled or
it's just like I
satisfied or
just want
whatever.
some pure peace and quiet and loneliness, and then you go all the way out there and you're like, wow, this is quiet. This is lonely.
Too
I don't
quiet.
want it.
Yeah. I mean, that game, it just pissed me off that you had to like refuel your spaceship and stuff, and so you had to be kind of like cautious of how much fuel you were using. Very annoying.
Yeah. But I kind of have to go, but is there any
Yes.
last quips you want to chuck in?
I think I'm jazzed off this Kubrick stuff so far. I'm loving it. I don't even
Well,
know what to add
I
except
think
that.
yeah.
What are we gonna watch next?
Well, I think we have one more to do from him that kind of fits in with us, which is Clockwork Orange, which I'm pretty keen to do
Oh
because I
yeah.
haven't seen it in ages and I haven't
So
given much time to it. I don't know about you.
No, nor about it. I'm keen. I'm
Oh, cool,
excited.
man. Yeah, that was pretty much it for Kubrick, at least for now. And then I think you had another idea of something else that we were going to do.
Oh yeah, Shin Godzilla.
Yep, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah,
Happy to do
we can
anything.
give it a go. Yeah, hell yeah. All right, excellent. We'll make it next week this time.
Yeah, that's fine with me, man.
Is that good?
That's.
We'll make it hard this time. We'll definitely do it.
Yeah, that's fine. Absolutely fine.
Barring any sort of like terrible catastrophe or whatever.
All right, man. Sounds good. Well, I will chat to you soon.
Easy peasy G, enjoy your day.
Thanks, man. Peace.
Peace.